Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode needs very little introduction. We have YouTuber Jay Siemens on the show, very popular guy. It's always great to get a little bit of time with Jay, and we're going to cover a handful of great topics in this episode. So without further ado, let's get right into it here. Jay Siemens on the JMO Podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloff Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloff Construction at their website, zuloffconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. For a great Canadian ice fishing adventure, I highly recommend Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge, located in Ontario's Lake of the Woods, 45 minutes north of Baudette, Minnesota. On a remote island, this ice fishing destination is very unique, very big in adventure. It's peaceful, it's quiet, it's Canadian, there's no crowds. All that paired with very excellent accommodations. They have a variety of well-furnished cabin offerings that some host up to 6 guests. This place is a multi-species mecca. The list goes on: walleyes, crappies, muskies, pike, burbot, smallmouth bass, tulibee, sauger are all thriving in this area, and the islands and the structure is endless. There is unpressured fish and new spots just waiting for you at Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge. Again, where big adventure and great accommodations come together, and it's easy to get to. For a visual of these offerings, you can find episodes of Jason Mitchell Outdoors Television or Sportsman's Journal on YouTube that showcase what Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge has to offer. You can find them online at tamarackislandwildernesslodge.com. More contact information is in the description of this podcast. But I want to get caught up with you a little bit, like even going back to some of the open water and the fall fishing or anything that you've been doing the last few months that would be fun to kind of get caught up on, and how you wrapped up your open water season, and then talk a little bit about some early ice stuff, and then definitely get caught up on some things that are happening. Like right now, you're launching some content, the Outpost Competition Season 3. So yeah, I guess you can kind of start with wherever that takes you in your mind, but let's get caught up here, man. Go ahead.
Where does that bring me? I guess I was just doing some year-end tallies on what I did, because I don't have like a set number of videos that I make. Like I know it's different in the TV world. It's like, hey, we're gonna make our 13 shows, and you plan that out. People ask me like, so how many videos are you making this year? I'm like, I don't know. It depends how the fishing is, right? And depends how scheduling works. And I think we did 31 open water videos this year. Posted 31 open water videos. I guess there's a couple that are gonna be released next year. So probably a few more than that, but yeah, that's a lot of filming and a lot of editing, and I'm very blessed to have a great team. And people see the front end and the shooting and stuff, but for every day of fishing, there's a couple days of editing. So, anyways, where am I going with that? Man, this summer was trying to think of some highlights. I bought a property with a couple of buddies on a place called Crow Lake down in the Nestor Falls region of like Northwest Ontario. And yeah, this place came up for sale in January, and me and two buddies went in on it. And that's been our latest outpost project. I think we've talked about Uncle Mark's Outpost, which is our one on Lake of the Woods that we did built a couple of years ago. And that's just coming up on its third season of being, available for guests. And now, it's funny. However, the timing worked out within a couple weeks of our first being born, Hannon. We bought Uncle Mark's and broke ground, and now baby number two, Jimmy, came along, and within a month, we bought a bought a second property. So I told Sam, like, if we have a third kid, I don't know, there might be a third outpost. I'm not sure. We maybe need to, like, pump the brakes a little bit, but no, it was fun working on this new property. Curl Lake's like this beautiful, crystal clear, you know, ligotrophic lake trout lake, and not many cabins. There's a couple, like a handful of lodges, but not too many like private properties on the lake. And it's been just a fun project. It's like as soon as my life feels like it's slowing down, then I decide to bite off something like that. But it surrounds me with great people, and it, you know, pushes me out of my comfort zone with all this building stuff. And it's fun. It is like a good excuse to document and bring you know, the viewers along for this experience. So yeah, it's that was a big part of the summer, and now it's like crazy. It's ice season. Like there's no transition season for myself. It's like it gets most messy at this time of year when it's like you're trying to shoot a deer, you're trying to do your last open water things, and you're thinking about first ice. So it's like the overlap of all three of those is just it's a train wreck, but a beautiful train wreck.
Being where you're at, you know, like down here, we have the ability to sort of comfortably put our boats in storage and then go through a little bit of hunting season and enjoy that. And then we usually have time to prepare for ice season. You like have a situation up there all the, like every year where there's like ice available, open water available. And then of course, if you're outdoorsy and you hunt like in a beautiful place like that, where you have like phenomenal hunting opportunities, if you're into that, it's like, you're like torn in three different directions from that.
Oh, and I, before I got into hunting, it was a little bit easier, but now that I've gotten into hunting in the last 5-6 years, it's like, I was out ice fishing last week. It was like my first ice trip of the season, and my cellular trail camera's going off and my target buck is daylighting while I'm ice fishing. And I'm just like, oh man, you know, I'm like torn, right? I'm like, I should be in the blind right now, but I'm 7 hours away ice fishing, but like, I'm happy to be ice fishing and filming, but I'm like, am I ever going to shoot this deer? I don't know. Right. And it's just this funny life.
Yeah,
it's
great. Dude. Yeah. It almost gets in the way. It's like a little conflicting, but yeah, man, like you do a really good job, like, which is kind of unbelievable, with your videos and you know, whatever, just personally, like you do such a good job of kind of mixing it up all the time. You know, you see you in the kayak, and then you're in the big windshield boat that you got this year, and like all that, you know, and then you're on like a fly.
That's so important to me. Yeah. I mean, I'm so aware of like what burnout is, and burnout, if you dive into like the YouTube world and the creator world, it's like burnout is such a real thing. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, been very aware of that, and I've seen it, you know, in people around me. And it's something I'm just so aware of because I want to have a long career. I know that I'm like, I pinch myself to do what I do. And I'm just like, I need to be hyper aware of that. And that's why I think, like, you know, I've been able to have editors that help, you know, with what I do, and you know, the editing workload, like it's, if you're doing it all yourself, it's a lot. Not saying you can't do it. And there's a lot of guys out there that shoot and edit everything themselves. I think if I was shooting and editing everything myself, I think I'd be a little burnt out. So, you know, it might be changing between, yeah, shore fishing or being in a boat or filming hunting or filming a cabin video. And then also, yeah, just the species within all that. Right. And, that's why I couldn't just do one thing. I think it's I'm wired too, but I love the variety. And even just within YouTube itself, it's just like, I love experimenting. Like what's, you know, what's next today. Like we were sitting in the shack, you know, a week ago when we're on the ice, and I'm just like, let's just think of as many YouTube videos ideas as we can think, and just things that are outside the box. And it's like some pretty goofy ideas. Some of them may happen, some of them may not, but I think that's what you need to do to keep it fresh and keep it fun. Right. Cause if I'm not excited about it, then I probably shouldn't be filming it. Right.
So. Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm one of these guys, like doing what I do, like I kind of cling to the information. I like watching people, you know. I think the entertainment value helps, the production level helps a ton. Like, you know, like your stuff is at the top production level, which I love, but the information too, like, you know, I can, like, I don't have a kayak, and maybe I'll never own one, but I like watching the variety of everything you do, even just like species variety, I feel like it's worth stating, you know, for anybody that, you know, is a walleye snob or a perch snob or a crappie snob or whatever, like I take so much from anybody, but you specifically, you know, when you, you know, communicate what you're doing in those videos, like, you know, you can go from one video where you're in a big boat that can go, that you can cover every square inch of a lake and break it down. And then the next video you're fishing, you know, like a kayak tournament, and you're kind of talking about your strategy and why you're using the, you know, being efficient, using the lures you're using, or being a multi-species guy. Like I pick up on all those things of like that I think about when I'm out fishing all the time. So I just like giving you props on that. And I take a lot from that.
Well, thank you.
I learn a lot. I learn a lot, even though I probably spend 95% of my time, you know, just within my own setup and fishing, you know, a short list of lakes around me. You know, it's like things that I'm very like comfortable with that I could easily be caught in a rut. And usually I am, but it's stuff like, you know, content like yours where I pay attention to that stuff of like, what am I not thinking about? Well, watching somebody, you know, fish a different species or doing different things, like I definitely pick up on things that help me a ton. I think it helps other people too, people that I talk to. So that's a thing.
Yeah, I think it's so important as anglers and hunters to just be pushed out of your comfort zone. And that's like this summer, I did a couple shoots that were just completely different. Like one shoot was I went to BC for bull trout, which was something that was on my bucket list. I had never done it before. And I'm like learning from scratch. And another trip I did was also to Vancouver Island and did some offshore stuff for halibut and cod and salmon. And I felt like just such a dummy in the boat, like, you know, struggling with a downrigger and how we're, you know, dealing with big swells and anchoring, you know, for halibut, all this stuff. It's like, but that's the only way you learn, right? It's like you said, we all get caught in our couple lakes we like to fish and a couple ways we like to fish. But I mean, I think that's just life itself. It's like, it's those moments where you get outside of your comfort zone where you actually learn. If you stay in your lane, you're not really going to learn too much, right? So
yeah,
that's what I'm always trying to do. And I feel uncomfortable sometimes. I'm just like, am I an imposter? Should I even be here doing this? But that's the way to learn, right? And I never pretend to be an expert in any of those lanes, right? It's just like, if I can take a little bit from, you know, musky fishing and transferred over to walleyes and vice versa, or whatever it might be, I think there's so much you can learn. And, you know, even things you can pick up from hunting and take into fishing and vice versa. It's always learning, like even today. So for example, today's video that I filmed, I know we were texting when I was still on the ice, and I love to do sight fishing videos. That is my favorite. One of my favorite things to do on the ice is cut a giant hole in the ice. And, you know, you're sitting above the fish and visually seeing them eat your bait. I'm like, I want to make a video and see how shallow I could catch a fish sight fishing, because you always, you know, you go 15, 20 feet offshore and you're in 6 feet of water, and yeah, there's fish swimming by. So today I'm like, hey, we're going to see how shallow we can go. So we're on a little lake that has brook trout in it. And our first hole was so shallow, there was like a boulder sticking out inside of our shack. Like I'm literally sitting on the ice beside a boulder. We cut the hole and like my ice saw is hitting into boulders, and there's like, you know, 20 inches of ice. Under 20 inches of water underneath the ice. And me and my cameraman Hayden look at each other and we're like, this is such a stupid waste of time. And it wasn't like, it wasn't 5 minutes later and this big, beautiful brook trout is swimming between the boulders right by our feet, staring at our lure. And I'm just like, okay, my mind is blown, right? And then we kept moving around that day and moving shallower. And by the end of the day, I was like in 16 to 18 inches of water and tight to shore. There's almost a tree coming in the shack at one point, like literally on shore, could not have been any shallower. And we were catching brook trout under the ice in like, if we would, we were talking about, oh, what happens if the ice breaks? I'm like, oh, we just stand. Like it might not even, it might not have even given us a booter. That's how shallow it was. And it was like, what started as just a goofy YouTube video idea as well turned into a learning experience. And I was just like, man, this was my best day of brook trout fishing I'd had in Northwest Ontario. And it was me fishing shallower than I ever have fished before and would ever think about fishing. And it was all because of a goofy idea. And now I'm just like, okay, my mindset is completely different on all of this. I'm just like, wow. So
do you have any theories? Not to give any spoilers on the video, but do you have any theories on what those fish are doing up there? I mean, they're eating, they're living.
I think there's more light. I think it's, you know, there's a wall that they get hit against, right? If they're open water, the minnows or bugs or whatever they're chasing can disappear into the abyss. But I think, I think you can push them into shore and they have nowhere to go, right? So I think from a hunting perspective, you know, a lot of those stock trout too, they just cruise the shorelines and do loops around the lake, in my opinion. So I think it's the combination of how stock trout are wired and also the fact that when they hunt, it's a lot easier if you can push those fish into boulders or into, you know, a rock face or whatever it might be. So, but it was a lot of fun. So,
yeah. But that's exactly it, dude. I love watching your stuff because you're willing to kind of switch things up just from your own personal norm. And it doesn't matter what it is, but those are all the things that, you know, so even if I'm not, I guess this is how I kind of converse with people too, is like, even if I'm not going to go to a destination, or I'm not even going to fish the species that you're fishing in one of your videos, it allows me to look at my own home body of water differently, even to where I can just try new things on my home body of water that I was never thinking of. And you can get outside your comfort zone, even without traveling far from home sometimes, you know, and like, those are all like super, but sometimes for that light bulb to go off, you have to leave your home body of water to go have that experience. Or I can live vicariously through your videos. And then like, literally like the next time I go out fishing, it's like, I've got four more ideas, you know, and they don't all pan out, but it makes fishing more fun. Even if I catch less fish, but I do it in a different way, in a new way or whatever, it expands your horizons so much. And it just adds to the fishing experience, which is all what we're all looking for. But I feel like, I just sort of obsess over that. Like what a guy can get out of a day of fishing. And if I'm left to my own devices, like if I'm just left to my own thoughts, I'm going to be in that rut for a really long time. But but I like seeing the variety on your stuff. Like you're definitely a leader in that sort of like open thinking. So you talk about not being necessarily like an expert in all the things that you do or the skills that, you know, you fish with people or whatever, but you do kind of have like a PhD in just being open-minded. And I think that in itself is like a top tier fishing skill that you can take anywhere. And so anyways,
well, thank you.
Yeah man. That being said, I do want to, you know, ask you, or at least just kind of give a little bit of more love to the series that you're pushing out right now, season 3 of The Outpost. You know, I think last time we talked, I don't know if it was season 2 or season 1 that was coming out, but and most people listening to this are probably familiar with it. If they're not, obviously that's exciting for them because they get to go and binge watch them now here after hearing this. But you know, maybe just to give it a little bit of love, maybe the origin story or what's going on. Obviously no spoilers or anything like that, but season 3, tell me a little bit about, sort of how that came together and just maybe a little bit of a synopsis there just to wet people's whistle a little bit before they go binge watch it.
Yeah, for sure. There's a series that Uncut Angling, you know, started, I don't even know what year that was. There's 3 Hour season 1 and 2. That you know, created a bit of a cult following, and it was the first. It was definitely in North America. There's been some of these multi-species competitions in Europe, but it's the first one I felt really, got a good following in North America, at least in the YouTube scene. That was Aaron Weeb's brainchild. He followed a series called Fly versus Jerk by a European YouTube channel called Cannel Gratis. And he took that series, it was a pike series, and turned it into a multi-species thing. So, you know, 39 Hours was so much fun to be a part of and help produce. And they're a ton of work to put together these competitions. So, I mean, we still get the question all the time, like, hey, when's the next season of 39 Hours? I don't know if there'll be another season. Like, that was Aaron's baby. And if he wanted to do it, it could happen again. But, you know, it's a big undertaking. But with that whole thing, I was like, I do want to keep the competitions rolling, but I maybe want something a little different. I didn't want to do the exact same thing, right? So I was just like, okay, 39 Hours was a competition with, you know, 3 or 4 teams spread across, you know, Canada, and we had American teams at like North America. And that one was 39 hours, the clock starts, and you fish for 39 hours. And it was hectic. It was a marathon. It was a lot of fun. But I was like, hey, let's just change that a little bit. Instead of everybody being spread apart, I want to bring everybody to the same location, and we'll call it The Outpost, even if it, like, the first two seasons were at outposts. One was at Uncle Mark's Outpost on Lake of the Woods, and the other one was at Bain Lake Outpost in northern Manitoba. But basically the deal was, we had, you know, three teams, two anglers per team, and we got dropped off at this outpost or traveled to this outpost, and then the competition was based out of there. So we all went fishing that day, went our separate directions, and came back at the end of the day and could share our story. So basically, longest fish of a specific species, different categories depending on where we're fishing. So this season now is season three up at Viking Lodge. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Cranberry Portage is this town that's, you know, right on the, you know, paved highway. It's kind of south of Flin Flon there, north of the Paw. And basically to the east, you've got the Cranberry Lakes, which is this amazing chain of lakes with walleye, pike, lake trout, and, you know, all sorts of other stuff, especially with all the connecting lakes. And then to the west, you've got, you know, Lake Athapap, which is known for giant lakers, like one of the best drive to lake trout lakes in the world, probably. And, you know, possibility of a 47 inch lake trout sort of thing. So we got this amazing spot in the middle of Viking Lodge where you can snowmobile on a groomed trail either way and you're fishing. So basically we had seven categories. We had lake trout, pike, whitefish or Cisco, stock trout, walleye, burbot, and perch. I think that's all the categories, seven categories. And basically, yeah, you get a point if you hold that fish for the week. So for the 4 days of competition, if you have the longest in that species by the end of the week, you get a point. So in this case, there's 7 points, and we're battling it out to capture those points. And there's a lot of strategy on, you know, trying to steal somebody's point, trying to capture maybe a point that's open and available. And just the characters, they're fun. They're my friends, right? So it's we all get along, and there's a lot of camaraderie and some competition as well. But I mean, for me, it's the type of series I would love to watch. And I think it resonates with other people as well, because it kind of feels like the, you know, your trip with the crew and, you know, that banter and that fun.
You know, watching the Outpost is like the first time that I even seen like half of these dudes. So rattle off, the roster of guys and kind of like where they come from.
Yeah. So myself and Tara Murata has been in all the seasons of the Outpost and at 39 hours. He's a fishing guide out of Toronto, and he's got this urban flair. He likes to rap. He likes to just talk at 100 miles an hour all day. And so he's one of probably the biggest character, and, you know, he's he balances me out. I'm a little like high strung, uptight, focused, and Taro is just wild. So you'll that'll all make sense when if you see the episodes and watch Taro. Another team, Josh McFadden. He's my, you know, co-creator of Catch and Cook, and you know, longtime friend. He's always a good time, and he's partnered up with Mark Tully, who you've probably seen in some past videos as well. He is just the funniest guy. He has so many one-liners, and between the two of them, yeah, there's so much comedy. And Mark and I used to guide together at various fishing lodges in the north, so that's kind of how we got that, you know, relationship as well. Known him for a long time. And then the last team is Joe Cooper and Dave Winters, and they're both full-time guides on Lake of the Woods and the American team. And they spend a lot of time fishing in Canada, so it's a pretty natural fit. And yeah, same thing. Joe is just a big personality, really funny. And then Dave kind of keeps him in rein. Dave's a little more focused, just a great guy. So anyways, this whole crew, they just all complement each other, I think, pretty well. And we all balance each other out. And it's one of my favorite parts at the end of every episode is we do this check-in, right? So we know what people have caught up until like midday on the competition days, but from midday till sunset, we don't know. So we come back at the end of the day, and we're sitting at the lodge, and we pass the microphones around, and it's all being documented, obviously. And, you know, we share our highs and lows from the day and what fish we caught. And it's funny, like every check-in gets a little more elaborate, and the stories, you know, sometimes we're messing with them and the stories drag on a bit, and it turns out that we didn't catch anything, or vice versa. We sandbag them, and then we're like, hey, we got a big one. So it's really fun. And, you know, like I said, we're competing against each other, but we're all cheering for each other at the same time. Like, I want to see big fish. And this season in particular, we were dealt the card of just ridiculously cold weather. We filmed it in January in the north, and it was frigid, which it has its own challenges, but I think it comes across okay. And like you said, our first episode, not to spoil, because there's some good fish caught, but maybe not as many fish as we would have hoped, but there is just some comedy. It feels like whenever the fishing was slow, the comedy picked up, and I think that kind of helped fill the voids.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloff Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloff Construction at their website, zuloffconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. For a great Canadian ice fishing adventure, I highly recommend Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge. Located in Ontario's Lake of the Woods, 45 minutes north of Baudette, Minnesota, on a remote island, this ice fishing destination is very unique, very big in adventure. It's peaceful, it's quiet, it's Canadian, there's no crowds. All that paired with very excellent accommodations. They have a variety of well-furnished cabin offerings that some host up to 6 guests. This place is a multi-species mecca. The list goes on. Walleyes, crappies, muskies, pike, burbot, smallmouth bass, tulipy, sauger are all thriving in this area, and the islands and the structure is endless. There is unpressured fish and new spots just waiting for you at Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge. Again, where big adventure and great accommodations come together, and it's easy to get to. For a visual of these offerings, you can find episodes of Jason Mitchell Outdoors Television or Sportsman's Journal on YouTube that showcase what Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge has to offer. You can find them online at tamarackislandwildernesslodge.com. More contact information is in the description of this podcast. Mark Tully, oh my gosh. Like, the things that he says that are so funny.
Incredible.
Like, I've done spit takes in my pickup before. When he just says those zingers, where if you just went back... And who knows how many, like, I get anxiety thinking that people might watch those episodes and not get his little subtle zingers, man. Like, I feel for people that need to watch these videos 2-3 times just to pay attention to when he's talking. It's unbelievable. Some of the things, like, if you just spent the time cutting out, like, after all 3 seasons, if you just cut out, like, his
Mark
audio,
quotes.
You could launch like a 1-hour comedy special, you know, like these dudes that have these Netflix comedy specials, you know, like if you just tried to mass like 30 or 40 minutes of his, it's awesome, man. Like,
but what I love about Mark is that he never cusses. He never says anything off color. He's so clean and great. And it's just like, I mean, I have some friends that will say some funny things, but I'm like, hey, you know, you cross the line. We're going to have to edit that out. Right.
Yeah.
And Mark's one of those guys that you never have to worry about it. And he's so funny and he's always clean. And like, that's an important thing. If you guys have, you know, if people follow my content, it's like, I want something that any age can watch that parents don't have to worry about their kids watching, right? That's super important to me. And with Mark, he's just an editor's dream because he's perfect. He's always clean and he's good. And man, he cracks me up.
The next thing, and this is kind of the segue, talking about, you know, being at Viking Lodge and all the places that you filmed The Outpost and you know, in your career, everybody that's familiar, so many people are, but like, you travel around, you represent a lot of different places. I want to spend some time in this conversation sort of, representing or shining a light on ice fishing destinations up there in Canada, everywhere that you've been. I feel like you're one of those guys, maybe the guy that has like the most notable PhD in like Canadian ice fishing destinations or all fishing destinations up there. And I didn't really give you a whole lot of warning for this. So, you know, hopefully you're comfortable with this, but I kind of want to just rattle off like, you know, what comes to mind? We got plenty of time to cover just talking about the different regions and the different great destinations that are up there, destinations that you've been to, maybe some, you know, that you find to be the most fun to talk about. We can maybe deep dive on what makes them special and whatnot. But it is that time of year where we're entering the ice season. People are either have it planned in the books or are thinking about, you know, booking some kind of a destination. So it's kind of a good time to have these conversations, I feel like. But yeah, I just want to talk about fishing destinations up there, places that you've been, and I guess you would be the guy that you can kind of navigate this conversation, you know, better than I can. But I just want to talk to you about the Canadian destinations that, you know, us Americans down here in the Midwest, you know, some of them that we probably know about, or we see them, you know, in content a lot, but maybe there's some that we don't, or maybe some that we kind of know about, but we should know a little bit more about. And so you're going to be my guy here to have this conversation with. But yeah, like it's early ice season, you know, heading into the ice season, what would be, you know, the list of destinations that we should be thinking about or start off with?
Yeah. I mean, what comes to mind right off the top when I think about ice fishing destinations and what already does draw in a lot of, you know, our American friends would be Lake Winnipeg. I mean, it's just, I feel like anyone in the, you know, Midwest has heard of Lake Winnipeg, or it's on their radar, and it can be, you know, a pretty intimidating place to come and fish this giant ocean. But it also, as much as it's intimidating, it's a big bowl and it's fairly easy to fish. And, you know, it's, you're not driving to the middle of nowhere. So I think some people get a little nervous when they get, you know, a little too far off grid. Nice thing about Lake Winnipeg is, you know, you're an hour from Winnipeg, obviously. So that's not too bad. The other thing too, is like, I do tell people, I'm like, you should broaden your horizons beyond Lake Winnipeg. Cool thing about Lake Winnipeg is they opened it up to, you know, sleeper shacks. In the past, they didn't allow commercial ice castles on Lake Winnipeg, which I feel like was a miss. So now in recent years they opened some allocations for that, and I'll tell you, it's pretty sweet to wake up on Lake Winnipeg and, you know, be able to fish around the clock and catch, you know, people would say in the past you can't catch walleyes in the middle of the night, and because people didn't log the hours, now with these sleeper shacks they're doing that. So I mean, Lake Winnipeg, the Red River, it's known for those greenback walleyes, those walleyes with the green tinge. You know, I know Jason's done a lot of filming up there. So I would say that's like one that if you're, you know, trying to wet your whistle and do some Canadian fishing, that's a pretty easy one. There's a lot of guides out there and it's, you know, not too far of a drive. You're only, you know, an hour and a half north of the, you know, North Dakota border. But beyond that, it depends how far you want to drive, right? Like, I mean, my neck of the woods around Kenora, I've been doing a lot of filming at a place called Five Lakes Lodge in the last couple of years. And it is the best drive to pike fishing, some of the best, I would say like top two or three locations that I've been to for trophy size pike through the ice. And I know that's the thing a lot of people want to do. And it's pavement all the way to the lodge. It's accessible. One of our videos coming out, it's going to be coming out on the Saturday. So in a couple of days, on the 29th or 30th, somewhere in there. Anyways, we built the world's biggest tip up and we brought it to this Five Lakes Lodge. And it's a 37 foot tip up. It was a brainchild, 37 feet from the top of the flag to the ice. And when I thought of where I wanted to film it, I was like, Five Lakes Lodge is the place. So Ian's a great owner. And I told him this idea and he's like, yeah, come, I'll help you out, whatever you need. So we disassembled this tip up. We built it in my yard. It was pretty funny. I'm getting off topic now, but it was like a couple week project and finally got it built. And then we went up to this Five Lakes Lodge. It's about a 3 hour drive from my house. And I was just like, hey, this is the place to catch a big pike. So yeah, we set up the tip up and caught a couple pike on it. And that's a video that's coming out soon. But it's amazing the fishing that you have within a couple hour, you know, radius of Kenora. But then also you go to Winnipeg too, and you've got all sorts of different variety. I mean, if people want to go north, that's another experience too. So I feel like there's kind of different realms. Like you can do I'm just thinking of in my realm, the Sunset Country region, like around Kenora, Lake of the Woods, lots of, you know, backcountry adventuring. If you want to do that sort of thing, you've got Lake of the Woods, you can fish by ice road. There are outfitters that do, Northwest Outfitters is a really popular one. I've done a lot of filming with them. And my buddy Jaden does, you know, ice castle rentals. And he also has offered, you know, a cool thing as well, where he'll actually like plow a road for you and help you get your ice castle out there. Cause I know some people want to bring their own ice castles. So basically you pay him for a service and he will plow and make sure, you know, put you on a spot and give you some guidance, but you're not actually, you know, renting his castle for the week. So that's a pretty cool option, I think, for people that have the gear ready. But the sleeper shack thing's pretty cool. Like I would say in general, we don't have as many all-inclusive type ice fishing destinations as you might have in the States. We've got a couple spots with sleeper shacks. Like I said, Lake Winnipeg has some, north end of Lake of the Woods has some, but there isn't really a ton more than that. When you head to the north, you've got, you know, Viking Lodge, right across the road is Baker's Narrows Lodge. Those are like the only, you know, other, there's Wekusko Falls Lodge, which you guys might've heard of. I think Jason's filmed there too. Those are kind of like the few only like all-inclusive options where you could rent a snowmobile, rent the gear, you know, food, guides, all that stuff. A lot of the stuff in Canada is a little more do-it-yourself. So it is worth doing that research and figuring, you know, what do you want out of the trip? Do you want to be fully guided? I know, you know, Baker's is a great place if you want to have the fully guided experience, but biking, you know, as well. But it depends on if you want to drive up with nothing, right? Like there's an opportunity to fly into the town of Flin Flon and, you know, get a vehicle. And like there's people that, I think there's somebody ice fishing there last winter, the winter before. He's like from Lithuania and he flew into Flin Flon Airport and was ice fishing. It's like, that's a pretty unique thing that you can do that because there's just not that many options like that around us. So I think the big thing is, you know, figure out what you want out of the trip and then kind of go from there. There's endless resources. And if not, you know, there's a rabbit hole of YouTube videos where you can probably find a video on somewhere I've been or somewhere, you know, Clayton Schick's been or who knows, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, that sense of adventure, you know, like the DIY, you know, there's definitely like, that's a lot of people embrace that, right? Like a lot of people, maybe they kind of want to be at that sophomore or senior level of it. And you know, maybe they kind of go to some of these places, maybe a little bit before they're ready, but they kind of got to do it to figure it out. But the lower hanging fruit, you know, I love the way you talked about that. Like some of the best, if it's your first Canadian trip, or if it's like a gift idea, if maybe you're booking it for, you know, for your buddies to go and it's like, you know, you're kind of making that decision for a group or whatever. Obviously, I think that it is really, really good to kind of first and foremost talk about those opportunities that have the amenities or that just sort of have a little bit of ease of use, like the drive to destination, you know, sort of element to it. But for those that are trying to sort of embrace that adventure, maybe they sort of, you know, they've been on a couple of trips, you know, like, I guess what would be in your mind, some of those like next level, you know, or kind of those mid tier or maybe senior level destinations or things that people ought to be thinking about, that are up there, you know, things that come to my mind, you know, talking about, you know, the lake trout stuff, where you talking to those people that are prepared in, you know, in their own way to kind of endure some elements, and kind of battle some adversity, you know, and people, whether they're ready or not, a lot of people kind of fancy themselves as that person. I kind of want to speak to them for a little bit and maybe represent some of those types of destinations.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the thing is, like a lot of those destinations with these ice fishing places, sometimes with open water. Yeah, I think with open water, you kind of get put in different buckets. So I think about some of the, you know, open water trips I've done and it's like, you have to go with a guide. You have to be on their meal plan. Like Wollaston Lake Lodge, I guided in Northern Saskatchewan for, you know, a couple of years. And there's no option of taking the boat out yourself or doing the self-guided thing, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of these places I mentioned now on the, you know, full plan, like I was talking about Baker's Narrows and Viking and Wekusko, you can do the fully, like you can just rent a cabin and do it yourself. So you're going to be paying, you know, significantly less and preparing your meals and doing all that. So it's not necessarily different locations. It's just, you know, it's not like you're going to get forced into these options with some of these lodges. They understand that people want to come up and do it their own. What some people do on these trips is they'll like, let's say you're hardcore, but you still like are a little unfamiliar. You get a guide for the first day. And even if you're not like, not saying you go back and hammer those spots every day, but it might give you enough info that you know what to look for and you can go do those other things. You know where the access points are, you know where the port houses are, you know, all this stuff. So, I mean, yeah, if you want to do big lakers in northern Manitoba, like I said, you got Wekusko. Clearwater Lake is a big one too that I didn't mention. Evergreen Resort's a great one there. Lake Winnipeg too. It's like Lake Winnipeg is pretty easy to do yourself. I've done videos on like, hey guys, here's the access points. You can stay at the Kanalta Hotel in Selkirk, and that's how you can do it. Kenora too. You can rent an ice castle and use it as your home base and fish there through the night, but then take sleds and go explore during the daytime for crappies and lakers and whatever, and then be back in your shack for burbot and walleye through the night. But yeah, I think there's a lot of good middle ground too, where you're not completely thrown into the thick of it. But then, hey, there is the possibility you could, go into the wilderness and ice camp and do all that. So it's I like some of that extreme stuff as well. But you just gotta be prepared with whatever you're doing. But yeah, we're truly blessed. I mean, I think about, yeah, within a 6 hour radius of me, the fishing opportunities I will not even scratch the surface of. And I like you're saying, I like to sample a bit of everything, but still it's like I've been doing this for a couple of years now, and I still look at the map and I'm like, wow, there's so much to figure out. So
Now, you've probably made a video on this, but to just kind of, include into this conversation, which I think is kind of important, like a list of, I don't even know if there's like a real number for it, just whatever pops in your mind, but like the 5 things or the 10 things, like items, gear items, or just gear strategy. Like if you're going to go somewhere and you're going to home base out of one of these places, but you're planning on doing some amount of DIY or all DIY, and you're gonna maybe fish a new lake, or you're gonna, try to these backcountry lakes, or you're gonna do that ice camping. You're way up north. It's not like what a lot of us are used to, where we have like full bars on our phone all day, every day. And gear gets beat up. Like that's, we've gone up there and filmed, and it's like, if you don't know what the weaknesses are in your gear, like by noon the first day, and doing some of these things, you're gonna know. What are some of your offerings? What are the first things that come to your mind? Questions that you get probably from your audience, or whatever. But like, what are the 5 or 10 or just the things that come to mind that are like gear items or just gear thought processes that you kind of gotta be aware of?
I mean, I think the first thing on that list is just to tell somebody where you're going. Once you get out of service, it's a little too late if you haven't told somebody. So telling people where you're going approximately. I'm always texting, my wife, even if I'm close. Like today, that lake I went to was fairly close to home, and I'm still like, hey, this is where I'm going. So she has an idea. Some sort of way to send a message. Obviously, there is cell service in some of our locations, but like there's a lot of areas that we don't have cell service. So I know there is satellite texting coming into a lot of devices now. A lot of, like, I think iPhones have satellite texting, which is great, but still you're only, one step away from losing your phone or your phone dying. So I have a Garmin inReach with me that comes along on any of my, backcountry trips. And now the fact that my iPhone has satellite texting, it's not like it's a replacement for the inReach completely. It's like, I want both of them along still, because yeah, like if things go bad, there's a decent chance that, whatever might happen, I might smash my phone in the process of me hurting myself, or I might lose my inReach or whatever. So having some form of communication there, bringing a lot of duplicates of things on these big trips. If I'm doing a big trip up north, like I'm going to bring, if you have an extra sonar, bring a backup sonar, bring an extra, I have an extra snowsuit that stays in my enclosed trailer all the time in case somebody gets wet or somebody, falls in somewhere. I'm just always bringing extras, always an extra heater. I always seem to have heater issues, right? So always bringing an extra heater along, extra propane. It turns into a lot of gear, but when you're north in the middle of nowhere, you will thank yourself so much for having extra, like extra, an extra belt on your snowmobile, like in your snowmobile, for sure you need that. And then the other thing you're talking about, destroying gear and what that looks like, riding across the lake. Pretty much my motto is anything that I care about, that is remotely fragile is going to be on my snowmobile or on my back. Like camera gear. I remember a shoot I did in the north, and it was for Ski-Doo, and they had this, camera crew, and they had, I don't even know what they said. I think it was like $100,000 of lenses that they had along. And I said, like, where are you putting that? They're like, it is staying on our back and it is going nowhere else. That is the only place it will ride is on our back in a backpack. They wouldn't even put it in the carrying case in the back because that has some rattle, right? And I'm like, I can appreciate that. You know, my camera gear isn't worth that much, but still, if I'm concerned, I'm wearing it on my back or it's going to be strapped on a seat. But basically it's like, you know, live scope, rods, tackle, anything that's fragile is going to be on my snowmobile. And then the only stuff, you know, some guys rig it up too, that they have, you know, you see it in the outpost. Joe Cooper has a rack on the front of his, sled, and he'll put his flasher and a cargo thing on the front. So, and then they'll have a rack on the side of their snowmobile for the shack as well, for the pop-up. So those guys literally will run with no toboggan as well. I still like to have a toboggan if I'm bringing like a 20-pound propane tank and whatever else. But a lot of these guys, they have their snowmobiles decked out to the point that they don't even need to bring a toboggan. And that is like the key to mobility if you cannot have a toboggan. Anytime I'm able to go ice fishing without a toboggan, like late season or when there's a warm spell, you break so much less gear, and it's a lot more convenient. So I would say, yeah, thinking about how you're packing, if I see people like try to put their live scopes in the back of their toboggan and all that stuff, and if you're going on a long run, you're going to just yard sale it. Like, I've seen wild things happen to toboggans. I've seen things go airborne and pieces of heaters exploding all over the place, and like, yeah, anything you can imagine. So the key is to keep it out of the toboggan at all costs. Typically in my toboggan will be, you know, a pop-up shack, some chairs, you know, a bump board, and then heater and propane sort of thing. But nothing really beyond that. Oh, I remember Aaron telling me a trip, and he was going up north on like a multi-hour snowmobile ride, and they had to take jerry cans along, and they put jerry cans in the toboggan with all their food and water. And they said one of the jerry cans exploded and all their food was basically wrecked from that gas spilling all over it. So like, I can't imagine that. I have this sleigh, and it's called a musher sleigh, kind of like a musher is in like a dog sled. And basically it's got a kind of a step on the back of it. So I can put gasoline and strap it to the back of the toboggan, and it stays separate from the actual enclosed part of it, which is, you know, a pretty sweet feature, because you don't want gas bouncing all over the place. So,
oh yeah, those things are like real deal breakers, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like wrecking a heater when it's sub-zero temperatures, where you just can't fish without it, and your hours, you know, snowmobile ride.
Yeah. Well, then your trip's done.
Yeah.
So if it's a cold day, I'm going to bring probably, you know, two heaters and two hoses. You know, typically the tank's fine, but I will bring, you know, two of each if I need to on days like that, just because I know that if that heater doesn't go, I'm going to be turning around and coming in. Like, you can work with pretty much anything else, but you can't work without heat. Like, if it's a cold day, then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. What else? What else when it comes to, like, you know, talking about destination trips, or just sort of, you know, mate, you know, you're a pretty popular guy. You probably get a lot of questions. I don't know, you know, kind of how that goes for you, but are there any like questions that you feel like you're just constantly having to answer, or just videos that you just have to make every year for like an awareness standpoint or from a teaching standpoint? Anything like that when it comes to talking about some of that more remote or adventurous type of fishing?
I mean, something that always needs to be talked about, and I know for me, it might feel repetitive sometimes because I've done specific videos on it multiple times over the years. And as soon as you don't mention it, then, you know, people give you grief, but it's the ice safety side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things that people don't realize, that in the middle of February, in the coldest stretch of the year, there can still be open water on these lakes. Lake of the Woods is a really good example of it, is there's still trucks and quads that go through the ice every year. Because they're like, oh, I just drove between this island and shore. And it's like, well, there's current there. And, you know, they drop through. So I think just an understanding of ice safety is something that's so important. And knowing that what some people might feel safe on, other people might not feel safe on, right? Like, I 4 inches is the standard that you see on all the, you know, government regulations and guidelines and all that stuff. I personally feel comfortable on less than 4 inches, but I wouldn't send somebody else on that if I wasn't with them. And like, as goofy as it sounds, it's like, I would say, I guess I'm a trained professional in that sense. I've broken through on purpose. I've broken through not on purpose. I've jumped in the water in my suit. I've practiced climbing out. I've done all that stuff. And it's just something you need to be prepared for. Like, I think a lot of people just, they see snowmobile tracks or they see footsteps and they just assume that the ice is good. You know, there's spots on Lake of the Woods that people like to drive their snowmobiles over the open water. So they'll go drive around town and they will skip over the open water from ice patch to ice patch. And people assume that, oh, there's snowmobile tracks, I'll just follow these. And they're into open water, right? So you can't just, you know, take it for granted when you see these things. And especially when you get into those cold conditions. I mean, you sink a sled when it's minus 40 outside, and you know, death is a definite option in a situation like that. You know, you gotta get your heater going right away. And I've had friends that have had some pretty scary situations there. So yeah, I think the ice safety one is just something that doesn't get talked about, you know, and in that whole scene. But it's easy to talk about all the gear, but it's like, no, let's talk about, you know, what happens when things go wrong too, and what to do in these situations. And
yeah, dude. And those little current areas and the islands and stuff like that usually aren't too far away from a good fishing spot. So everybody's testing it out, you know, or everybody's like curious about those spots. Yeah, 100%, man. The closer, this will come out before, this will be out before the St. Paul Ice Show. So am I seeing that right, that you're going to be down there?
I'm going to be down there all 3 days. Yeah, we're going to do a little finale viewing, so you'll be able to see it before it goes on YouTube. You'll get to see who wins before it ends up on YouTube. And so that's happening the Saturday, the ice show at the seminar stage at 5 o'clock. So we're gonna give some prizes away, and hopefully a couple people show up and we can watch the episode on the big screen, and that'll be good. And Catch and Cook will have a booth on the main floor, so I'll be hanging around there and bouncing around a couple other booths. But it'll be good. Last year was my first sample of the ice show. I went down for one day and I'm like, yeah, I got to go back. I got to do all 3 days this year. So I'm excited to get there and chat ice fishing for a couple of days.
Heck yeah, dude. Is there like a schedule? Like, do you have like a schedule of like when you're going to be where?
I should have a schedule. I don't have it finalized yet, but that'll be something that'll end up on social media eventually.
Are you selling tickets to that, to the viewing?
You know,
there?
It's free. It's free. If you're at the show, then that's it. Yeah. You just show up to the seminar space, no tickets needed, which I'm excited about. I originally we were looking at like venues and stuff, and then I'm like, oh, we can do it. Like, it worked out with the organizers to do it during the show. And I'm like, you know, for me, I don't care about making a dime off of this. I just want as many people to see and enjoy the outpost as possible. And yeah, so that's what we're doing.
Are any of the other guys going to be able to make it?
Josh McFadden will be there, and I think that's probably it, unless some other guy surprised me. But yeah, I think that'll be it.
Right on, dude.
Have a good time.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, that's all I got for you, man. I always appreciate it, and always.